welcome to the Business Success Club. I want to say welcome, and you are in for a treat in this group. Hey, thank you so much for tuning into this podcast. And on this podcast, what we really want to establish is this: how do hardworking entrepreneurs build profitable and scalable businesses whilst having the freedom and balance to do the other things they love, like family, vacations, sports, fun, adventures, and charity? So let's tune into today's podcast.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Business Success Show with me, Matt Catrum. And today you are in for a treat because I am one of the people who coaches me in this particular aspect of creating and realizing life and in business. So I'm going to be introducing to you in a very short moment, Brian Main. And Brian Main is one of the best at helping. This is exactly what Tony Robbins said. He said, Brian Main is one of the best at helping people create a world-class blueprint for their life. Not just goals, but sustainable success. His mapping systems are a blast and really effective. That's Tony Robbins' words. Now, Brian Main has worked with companies like Microsoft, billion-dollar companies like Disney, Coca-Cola, Siemens. And the system that he teaches, I also use to plan my year, plan my month. He's also introduced this system to my children who love it as well. Yeah. They do love it. And so thank you for joining us at the Business Success Show. As you know, in this particular show, what we like to answer is this: how do hardworking entrepreneurs build profitable and scalable businesses whilst having the freedom and the balance to do the other things they love, like family, like sports, like adventure, like charity? And I say there is more to life than just the hustle and the daily grind. So with no further ado, let me get our guest interviewee on here, Mr. Brian Main. Brian, tell us a little bit more about your entrepreneurial background. And more importantly, later on, tell us how you got to a place where you created this program, this system, if you like.
It's lovely to connect with you again, Mac, and thank you for those nice things you said there. I suppose in some ways I was born into an entrepreneurial attitude because my family are travelling funfair people. And for generations, I can trace my ancestry back, related to the two old UK circus families as well. So my father's side, Chipperfield Circus, and my mother's side, Smart Circus. And for some generations, I've got pictures of my great-grandfather opening his amusements in London at the Olympia. And so I was born into that life. And it's an unusual life, of course, traveling around with the funfairs and those things. And one of the aspects to it was I really didn't attend much school. I would go to school maybe for 5 months each year. That was divided between different schools. It wasn't 5 months at one school. Because of moving around and the lifestyle I grew up in, I left school at 13, which again sounds unusual to a lot of people, but it was what was normal for someone in my community at that time. And the reason why people leave school early at 13, and everyone I knew, all of my friends, my sister, my brother, they all left school at 13. Is that in that life, in the funfair life, there is no sort of formal career opportunities. It's a self-employed existence, and some casual labour is hired to do the heavy lift. But really, it's a self-employed mentality you grow up in. And most children will leave school at 13, and they will take on part of the business. They'll be given a stake. And so my 13th birthday present was a rocket-shaped bubblegum machine and a set of keys. And that was how my father introduced me to business. I learned to count mostly by running the cash desk for him in the amusement arcade when people wanted coin to play in on slot machines. And I would call bingo. I learned again about numbers, and it was a good grounding really for public speaking, if I think about it, calling the bingo. So in that life, I had no qualifications, of course, because of leaving school at 13. And I never learned to read and write properly. And I think that is more to do with, I really struggled with dyslexia rather than the lifestyle, because my brother learned to read well, my sister, etc. And my father was completely illiterate, though. And my mother could read well. And my father paid for me to have private tuition. I would have a tutor come and work with me in the caravan. I just couldn't get it. And so I don't think it would have been different if I'd have been in one school the whole time. Mm. At 18, I took the family business in a new direction. I become the youngest person at that time to open a disco. My father had taken on an amusement arcade at the seaside on the Isle of Wight. And above it was a big empty space. He didn't know what to do with it. And I come up with the idea of turning it into a disco. And I was given the license at just 18. It was 19 when I opened the disco. And I ran that disco for some years and become incredibly successful with it. We were in all the music magazines at the time. It was quite an unusual place. It was 1981 when I opened. It was the beginning of the new romantic scene. And I opened up a very unusually themed club disco. Had an unusual music policy, and people liked it, and we become well known. There was even a documentary made about the place, and I was financially very successful with that as well. Very wealthy, really, quite young, lived in a big house, drove a fast red Italian sports car, and life was very good for me. And then in the late 80s and early 90s, it all changed. And the change really that came was affordable airfare. The price of air travel really dropped.
Okay.
And English people started taking their main summer holiday in England, not in England rather, but abroad. And so my customers, 18 to 30, were really the first people to start doing that. And so they were going to Spain and Ibiza and places. They weren't coming to the Isle of Wight anymore for their summer holiday.
So let me just add this on. For those that I know, the Isle of Wight is on the southern coast of the UK. It's one of the southernmost part you can go to. And UK is not renowned for its sunshine. So so people are now traveling abroad now, you were saying, yeah, early 90s.
Yeah, and the young family groups were the next ones to stop taking their holidays really in England and to do exactly what you said, to go where the sunshine was. And that would be mainland Europe. So Spain and Italy, some to France. And the Isle of Wight as an island has no industry here.
Okay.
Tourism is the industry. And when that started to end in the late 80s and early 90s, it just became a very sad time. The Isle of Wight became one of the unemployment high points in the south of England. A lot of businesses closed down. A lot of the hotels were burnt down for insurance money.
Oh, wow.
High streets all went into decline. And it became a very, very sad time. And my family's business went out of business that time. And so I went from being very wealthy at around about age 23, 24, 25, to owing £1 million in debt at age 29. And the business closed down, so my income stopped, the family business, and my home was repossessed, and car and other possessions were repossessed. My marriage crumbled under the pressure. And I really didn't know what I would do. I moved into my old bedroom in my parents' house, but their home was also going to be repossessed against the debt, and my brother's home was repossessed. So it really wiped out the whole family. And I, of course, I had no qualifications because of growing up in the travelling family, and I had no formal work experience. I'd always worked for myself and my father. So there was nothing really to write on a job application form, and I couldn't have written the form, of course. I couldn't. At age 29, I still couldn't read or write properly. And I was in a world of fear. I mean, in the future just looked dark. I couldn't see what I was going to do to get out of it. I had some relatives that that were still traveling, the funfairs, as a lot of my relatives are, and they were saying, look, come back. Well, you know, we've got an old caravan you can sleep in and we'll help you get some equipment. But I said, that is going to clear £1 million of debt. And
so they were traveling around the mainland, were they?
Yeah. Okay. And the fun fairs would travel all over England, of course. Oh, my family stuck to the south of England, and my sister, my nieces, nephews, cousins, they're all still out traveling with the fun fairs even today. And so I wasn't sure what I would do. And life was looking very dark. And it's interesting, really, that so often in my teaching now, I'm saying to people, look, it's quite often darkest just before the dawn.
Right. I agree.
And I think it's an important thing so that people hold on to the hope when things look really grim. And the light that shone for me was that I was invited to join a direct sales team and also a network marketing organization. And I wasn't enthusiastic about either, but it was pointed out to me that I had £1 million of debt and couldn't read and write and no qualifications and that I needed to go and do something. And this was something I could do, and it was commission only, and I wasn't very good at it. But through joining the direct sales team, I was introduced to personal development. And that became the big turning point in my life. And in particular, I met a wonderful guy. He became my coach for a while. And what he was able to explain to me in a very, very simple way was how lasting success is not an accident. It starts with the thoughts that we think. And he was able to explain to me the simple science of positive thinking. And I'd heard of positive thinking, but I just thought that was like somebody's opinion, like Henry Ford's opinion. If you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't. I'd heard the saying before. I just thought to myself, that's like someone saying, be happy is a piece of advice. It's an opinion, but it's not scientific. Mm. When I was helped to understand that by using our free will and choosing a positive thought, we stimulate the brain cells to release serotonin, which not only gives us a good feeling, and these days lots of people have heard of serotonin, it's more widely talked about on the news. Right. It's the chemical that's released if we take an antidepressant, of course, like Prozac. But the brain naturally produces it. And back 27, 28 years ago, when I was first being taught this, I didn't understand at first just how purposeful this is. So something can happen in your day or your life, and you may have an immediate negative response towards that thing. Mm. But within a few moments, it's a choice.
Right.
And you can choose to continue focusing on what's wrong, or you can choose to focus your mind on what could be right and look for the opportunity, the silvery lining in the cloud. I didn't realize that was a science. And when I started to understand that by holding that positive thought, you make the connections between the brain cells that help you activate more of your brain. It helps you to see the opportunity hidden within the difficulty. And you can establish those new brain cell connections by repeating the thought over for a few days. And that's how we form beliefs. And in turn, our beliefs influence our attitudes, our behavior, and ultimately, of course, the results we produce in life. And that simple understanding that true success is not an accident, and that we can consciously shape our life. There are lots of uncertainties and lots of things that happen unexpectedly, just like this year.
Yeah.
But that we still have an influence long term, and in the moment, of course, an influence over how we greet each situation and whether we greet it with a positive attitude or a negative. I think I'd grown up while having this entrepreneurial spirit, I think I grew up with a subconscious belief that success was mostly luck. And I had a lot of success when I was young. I thought myself, perhaps I've had all of my success, all of my luck, and there's no more coming.
That must mean something there, Brian, that you are in the family, your father has introduced you to manage certain bits of the business. you've gone along with it. You've taken over the family business at 18, taken it forward, grown it, created new businesses, the disco era, all that kind of stuff. Things are going well. You made that you're wealthy, nice big house, nice car. Everything could not be better. I mean, things were great.
Yeah, yeah.
Age of 29, you've lost everything. The economy is shifted. You've lost everything. You have now, you're living with family or friends. You're trying to, you've got £1 million worth of debt on your head, money you owed other people. How does, you know, I know your mentor came along through network marketing, but in that moment, how did that really feel? And what was the choices you discussed, you realized that you've got to make in order to change this round? Because I know you said it was dark.
Yeah. It felt hopeless. I did feel suicidal at one point.
Wow.
My parents had just retired at that time from the business and handed it over to me and my brother. So I felt hugely responsible, oldest son. They were 65 and about to be made homeless and broke, you know, and part of the £1 million debt was their responsibility as well. And so it was an awful feeling. My father pulled money together by doing car boot sales. My mother took a cleaning job. You know, we just all did what we could. Finding personal development not only gave me practical tools, and I latched on to practical tools quite quickly, because one of the things I realized was I wasn't the only guy in the sales team that received this workshop.
Okay.
But for some of them, it just washed over them. And others latched onto it. I was one of the ones that latched onto it. And what I wanted to know quite early on was, can I use this positive thinking brain cell connection thing? Can I use that to help me overcome my learning challenges and learn to read? You're right when you say that things were very good for me. I was married to an amazing and stunningly beautiful woman. I had a lifestyle that I know many people envied, and I had a lot young. And the truth is that even with all of that, inside, I always felt very insecure. And although I couldn't quite articulate it, put my finger on it, deep down, I didn't feel that I was as good as other people.
Right.
I felt that I was less than other people. Even though I knew I had a great life, and even though I knew there was many people that would love to have the life I had, I didn't feel as good as them. And it was some years into personal development before I really got to grips with why that was. And part of it was I was embarrassed about my gypsy roots, but also I was very conscious of not being able to read and write, and other people could. And the guy that I met, who was a coach and a trainer to the sales team, I confessed to him my situation, and he helped show me how I could focus the information that was being given in the sales to also overcoming my learning challenges. And it took me a year to teach myself to read well, and it was about making new brain cell connections. And when I learned to read, it felt like some magic, and of course it gave me a huge lift in my self-esteem. Wow. And I wanted to read everything just because I could.
Yeah.
Big words out loud, because I was still insecure and I was trying to impress people. Look, I can read now. And my coach encouraged me to read more personal development and self-improvement, and to not waste my time with newspapers or comics or magazines or even novels.
Yeah.
Really, in those early days, and to fast track by understanding the fundamental laws and principles of success, to apply them in my life as fully as possible. And invariably, if we're going to do that, we need to find tools and techniques, because there are a lot of people that will know personal development. And as you understand, Matt,
it's
not knowing it, it is applying it. And that's why throughout history, there have been and lots of tools and techniques that people use, like visualization or chanting or mantras or exercises, to help them develop themselves and become more, basically. And as I applied those tools and techniques, so life took off. And it took me 10 years to pay back the debt. And I never paid it all back. I did deals with the bigger creditors, like the banks, to reduce the debt. But I was determined that I would honor as much as I could, not just the local creditors, but the bigger creditors, because I wanted my parents to keep their home. And so I knew I had to go and strike a deal, because a number of people have said to me over the years, why didn't you just go bankrupt?
Right.
My parents would have lost their house. And I wanted them at 65 to keep their home. And it was hard work at times, but then it became a very motivating reason as well to push myself forward and to rebuild my life. A lot of people wanted to know how I was achieving the things I was achieving. My performance figures rose at work from the lowest in the team to the highest.
And this is the sales job that you had.
Yeah. Wow. And so my manager was increasingly asking me in the first year or so, go make a presentation for the team. Go and tell the team this new technique you've learned, or this new thing you've developed, or this new routine. And other people started to follow it and do things because they saw me making progress. And it just became a matter of time before I made the switch into training. Uh-huh. I was given a very fortunate break, and I do count it as good fortune, that very quickly as I decided to move into training, I was offered the opportunity to work in London as an employed trainer on a monthly salary, okay, teaching Tony Robbins' material for Robbins Research UK. And so that became my start into professional personal development. And not long afterwards, I was also asked if I would be trained up to teach Stephen Covey's material. And so it was a very, very good thing for me, because it meant that, you know, quite quickly in making the decision to be a trainer, I found myself in employment and I learned a great deal. The question that was always in my mind is, why are we not teaching practical goal setting and simple positive thinking strategies to our children as standard in state education? I still feel very strongly about it. It has improved, I will say that. Okay. And in the last few years, growth mindset has become a very accepted aspect of what is needed for success. It's not just about academic and measurement and qualification. The growth mindset aspect has been widely recognized. It wasn't so much back when I was asking the question, which would have been sort of 1994. And I was particularly interested in what is really important when we set a goal. How do we maximize our opportunity of achieving our goals? Because there's a right way and a wrong way to set goals. Mm-hmm. It is actually a naturally occurring process within us. We are goal setting organisms, if you like. Understanding it so that you can create your goal in a way that has maximum impact on your consciousness and subconscious mind.
And that's one of the
maximizing your chances to achieve it.
Exactly. And I'm glad you're talking about that now, because that's my next question as to what, you know, I want to understand for our listeners and viewers here, what is goal mapping, and what is the difference between goal mapping and goal setting, which a lot of people have heard of goal setting.
Yeah.
They've even heard of the SMART model and all these other goal setting models. But, you know, I've done a lot of those stuff. But what I love about your goal mapping, it just brings everything to life. And I just want you to take some time to explain that and see, and so people can see how they can utilize that.
Goal mapping is simple way of setting goals. It has a lot of depth, but in essence, it's quite simple to do. which is why it has reached a lot of children, more than a million children in 17, 18 countries, maybe more, have created goal maps to increase their grades, aim for a brighter future. Likewise, it is powerful enough that world-leading organizations like you mentioned, Microsoft, Siemens, Disney, Coca-Cola, Barclays Bank, British Telecom, will use goal mapping with their employees. And there are many, I could run off a long list of companies, and it's not just the big ones, it's organizations large and small. Sports people will use it, health and well-being professionals use it. There are a lot of coaches that use it with their clients. And what it is a way of setting a goal using a combination of both words and pictures. And it's fundamentally important that you use both.
Right.
That you have the words written in a powerful way, as an affirmation, for instance, and you have a stimulating image that is a reflection of those words. I'm emphasizing the word stimulating because if it's a meaningless image for you, it won't really work in a powerful way. For the image to have power, it needs to be meaningful to you. It doesn't need to be meaningful to anybody else, but it needs to be meaningful to you. Why is it important to have this combination of words and pictures? It is because our brain is in two halves, basically, left hemisphere, right hemisphere. And the left side of the brain, which tends to be more logical and analytical, thinks primarily using words. And when somebody has a stroke, it will often be the left side of their brain that is damaged and they can't speak properly or at all. The right side of the brain is more pictorial and spatial awareness. Right brain's creative brain. Now, the latest brain research, neuroplasticity, shows that the brain is so flexible that both sides of the brain can do all the different things, which is why when somebody has a stroke and their left brain is damaged and they can't speak, if they set a goal using their free will and that they remind themselves every day and they make effort to speak again, they literally stimulate the right side of their brain to rewire itself. Okay. They learn to speak again through the right side of their brain. And I have a real life example of it with my mum's friend who went through that experience a few years ago. So the left brain tends to be more logical words, right brain more creative pictures. If you look at the goal setting books from the year 2000 back,
okay,
most of them, and certainly from the world's leading experts at that time, so Zig Ziglar, yeah, Jim Rohn, right, even Tony Robbins, I have to say, Brian Tracy, when you look at those older books and what they say about goal setting, they will tell you in those books, write your goal out and then write it again and again and again and write it 100 times every day and keep that up for 1 month.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work to do that, actually. But the reason why they recommend that endless repetition is because the words of your goal have actually quite a limited impact in influencing your subconscious mind.
Interesting.
The subconscious mind is enormously powerful and it responds predominantly to imagery. When you go to sleep at night, it's your conscious mind that goes to sleep. Your subconscious keeps working 24 hours a day. And as your conscious mind goes to sleep at night, your subconscious comes more to the surface and starts to produce dreams. Mm. And I expect you, like everybody else, will dream in pictures, regardless of the language we speak.
Yeah.
Question all around the world, everybody dreams in pictures because it is the language of the subconscious. And our subconscious works like our own personal autopilot. It's looking to do many of the things for us in the background, all of the habits and skills we develop. They're all processed really through our subconscious mind. It's very powerful, but we must command the subconscious. The analogy I use for children is that it's like a magical genie. Mm. Do all amazing things, and it can help your wishes come true, but it can't wish for you.
Right.
You must command the genie. And so, but creating your goal in words and pictures, it helps to activate both the logical mind so you can be clear about your goal, and the pictures stimulate your subconscious. It's like putting the postcode into a sat nav. Once your subconscious gets the goal, it's going to subtly keep directing you towards it. Now, if you look at the goal setting books from 2000 onwards, you start to see the experts recommending dream boards and vision boards. And this came about because during the 90s, sports psychologists really started to understand the power of visualization. And professional athletes in the early 90s were very skeptical because the wisdom was physical training, get fit, that wins medals. But it was shown very clearly with the Russians and the Americans at first, and then other countries, that by using visualization, you command your subconscious and it enhances your physical ability. You give yourself your best chance. And one of my first training partners was a British Olympic sports coach. And so I was introduced very early on to this idea of how you use visualization to enhance your performance. And then the breakthrough of goal mapping just come that if we are going to set goals in a really meaningful, powerful way, we need to use this combination of words and pictures. And at the time, there was no dream boards or vision boards. Now, they've become very popular and they work for sure. Yeah. And I have people come to me that have dream boards and vision boards. The limitation often is that they don't have clearly written goals to balance the nice pictures. They have a lot of nice pictures on their dream board, but there will be no clarity around the goal, no exactness, and no plan, no action plan of how they're going to get there.
Right.
A goal map comprises seven aspects or steps, and they are dream. What is it you want? So what's the future success look like, either in a specific area or project or life generally? And that's very right brain. So have that visualization, look forward. And then the second step is to use the left brain and to say, okay, there's a lot of things here I'd like to achieve, or I've got this great picture of success. What's the main thing? And some people, when I take them through this process, they say, Brian, I want it all. It's all important. That wanting, and I agree with them, they, you know, it is all important. Mm-hmm. And also I know that the wanting is emotional. And this second step, using the left brain, order, is about using logic and strategy to identify the priority. Because there will normally be one thing that once achieved gives leverage and benefit to help you to achieve the others. And this comes up very strongly when doing a business goal map, for instance.
Wow.
Because I'll take a team through doing a team goal map for the business. Mm-hmm. We want to find that one thing that by doing that gives us the most advantage. And then I get them to start mapping it out. And normally I get them to choose five goals, or if I'm doing it for myself, five goals. And main goal in the center and then other goals either side.
Do you have a pictorial or anything?
Yeah, I've got one right here. This is one of my maps. Now, this one's been created using my online software, which is free for people to use.
Okay.
And we've got a children's version as well, and some of the support material there for families because of the COVID situation. So with the online program, you can put the words and the imagery together.
At the same time.
On the same page. Whereas with the paper templates, and I've got one of my sort of hand-drawn
paper templates that I've been using for years. Yes, those are ones I use. So I would have the left brain version, the handwritten one, and I'll have picture, the one where I drew next to each other, and I'll move from left to right and all the rest of it. And so that's the one I've used. I didn't realize you had an online software version.
Yeah, the online software is actually third generation.
Okay.
So the history to it is that...
Before you go into the history there, Brian, one of the burning questions I had is, What led you to, or how did you create this? How did you come up with goal mapping at a time when everyone was very much linear on the left brain, write it 10 times a day, whatever it is? Where did that come from, that I'm going to create this thing?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, thank you for bringing me back to that, Mac, because I jumped around a little bit.
Yeah, no problem.
Of it all.
That's fine.
I was intensely asking that question, you know, what's important when you're setting goals? What needs to be included? Why is it worth? And I'd be asking those questions all the time. I've become quite obsessed about it. And during the day, I was in a lot of training, learning Stephen Covey. I was learning accelerated learning and whole brain activation and mind mapping and lots of different techniques. And I think part of it was my dyslexia caused me to be quite visual. And I was just driving my car one night, thinking about it all and asking the question, what's necessary? And I saw the whole thing complete in my mind. I saw a goal map in the way that you explained it. And I don't have my templates here, but yeah, basically words and pictures, two maps side by side. And I knew instantly, intuitively, it was an answer to my question. That if we're going to set goals in a really meaningful way, we use both.
Right.
And that was really the beginning of the technique. I started teaching it in 1995. The first presentation was to a communications company called Mercury Communications. Oh. And the word just spread. And lots of people that were using the technique started to achieve their goals, and quite quickly. And my phone started ringing with people saying, I was on your course a year ago and I've achieved all my goals and I'm now a manager at British Telecom. Would you come and run the same program for my new team?
Wow.
Or I'm a, you know, manager at Microsoft. Or, and so the growth into all those big companies was organic. At the same time, I had schools asking for the program. And so I took a year out in 1997 and I created the children's version, which started running in schools a year later. And that has been phenomenally successful. And the opportunity came to write a goal mapping book and make videos and audios, so that the whole thing just built a momentum. What has really helped goal mapping spread, because it's now reached about 5 million people around the world. It's difficult to know for sure, obviously, with when the numbers are big. A lot of people decided to share it, teach it.
Right.
I made the decision very early on that I would make the core teaching free, because I felt very, very grateful that someone stepped in and helped me change my life when it was looking dark. So I'd held for some years that this was a mission and a purpose for me.
Right.
And when the flash of insight came of goal mapping, it felt like a gift from the universe, if I'm honest.
Fantastic.
I wouldn't necessarily say that in a business presentation to Microsoft, but I just thought to myself, I need to treat this in a good way. I need to honor it.
Yeah.
And so when people started saying they wanted to teach it, I had no hesitation, and I created a simple trainer program. I run the first Train the Trainer program in about 1999, but there were actually some people already teaching it by that time.
Okay.
Unofficially, they just sort of saw it, found it, liked it, started teaching it. But now there are more than 1,400 coaches and trainers and teachers and therapists that have all been through the certification program and use it on a professional basis, and some of them quite well known trainers in their own field. And so that's really helped the spread of the program. In all of my books, and I've written 4 books, and they're all about mapping in different ways, except for my children's book, which is a story to explain the same thing. I really felt it was important somebody draw their goals on paper.
Okay.
I was convinced that the physical activity of picking up a colouring pen and drawing is what helps to form the brain cell connections and send the command to the subconscious. And I've needed to go back and rewrite some of my books because the online program in the last few years has shown that really that's not so.
So it's just the online program has been just as effective in terms of people.
More so, yeah. It was a bit of a kick up the bum for me, to be honest, because for years I've been saying, no, you've got to draw your goals. I used to see people in the early days taking a magazine or a parlor magazine, cutting out pictures to sort of put up and create a collage and a dream board. And the results of that were never as effective as somebody drawing their goal map.
Mm.
Microsoft, as an organization, asked me to create the goal mapping software. And I was very reluctant because I didn't believe that using pictures in an online program would work as well as drawing. But it was a big contract. It was Microsoft. And I was going to say, no, I'm not sure it's going to work. But I had my doubts and I did explain that to them, but I went ahead and we created it and they did like it extremely. The challenge was that back in 2010, when the original program was created, the availability of imagery at that time on the internet that you could go and use freely and put into your map, it just wasn't there. And the ability to upload photos wasn't great. No. And the whole technology really was a bit clunky. And so you needed to be quite an enthusiast with using a computer because nobody was doing anything on a tablet then or a mobile phone in the way of this type of work. So you needed to be an enthusiast. And what's happened in recent years is the technology has got better and better and better. The a number of free images online, it's just millions and millions and millions. And it's become a very organic, sort of fluid process now to be able to create the map online. And in fact, with my maps, I tend to do both. I sometimes draw the pictures, but then I would take a photo, crop them and upload it. And the reason why the online programs become more powerful is because people are able to have images that really, really please them. And I went and spoke with some neuroscientists when I started seeing the results. And I had spoken with scientists in the past about this, but I've met these two great neuroscientists. And one of them said to me, when I showed him the data, showed him the results, he said, it's not about the medium. So it's not about what somebody draws or doesn't. It's about the meaning that they have connected to the image. And if a person likes the draw and they've got a good meaning, good feeling towards that drawing, not only will they draw it, but they will look at it regularly. And every time they look at it, they're re-establishing the brain cell connection and they're forming a stronger belief. But if a person draws something and they're embarrassed about their drawing, and I would often see this with business people, business leaders.
Yeah.
They don't want to show it to others. They don't want to share it. And they don't want to look at it themselves because it doesn't give them a good feeling. And so they don't establish the brain cell connections in the same way.
Makes sense.
The online software has taken all of that away. If somebody likes their drawings, they can draw and they can upload them. What it gives is flexibility, which is why it's being used in business goal maps in particular. On paper, when you create your goal map, it's fixed. And if you want to make a change, you've got to create a new map.
That's right, yeah.
Online, you have that ability to just change it, update it, share it, which is why quite a number of coaches have adopted it. Just in the last 2 years, I really only started to see the take up with it from about 2018 as people's habits of working online, shopping online, learning online, all started to change. And I don't know if you remember, but we had that particularly bad weather back in 2018 here in England and across much of Europe. It was snowed in. It was called the Beast from the East here in England.
Yes.
So I had about 5-6 weeks here where my normal work pattern of traveling to different countries and speaking at conferences was ended. And so I started using the online program, coaching people to do their maps online.
Yeah.
And it's grown from there. And it's, of course, been a great blessing this year because of the restrictions. And it's why I've put in more of the family material and other things this year to support people, not just business people, but people generally during this COVID-19 crisis, really.
Fantastic. It's amazing. It's amazing. Your background is amazing. It's inspiring, you know, from adversity and challenges to turning that around and following your what you discover to be your purpose. And some people would say, you know, coming up with the goal mapping system is almost near genius. I mean, it's, I think you had a flash of insight, you took it, you ran with it, which is fantastic.
It took me about 6 months, I reckon, after the flash of insight to reverse engineer, to work out what I'd seen.
Right.
The words and pictures I sort of understood intuitively right at the beginning, but the thing that did surprise me was that about 5 years after that flash, I started dating a person that became my wife, right, who was Hindu. And she introduced me to Hinduism.
Yeah.
Family were all practicing Hindus. And I was amazed to see that some of the oldest aspects of Hinduism are yantra and mantra. Mm-hmm. A mantra is a term that most people will know of. It's a chant, obviously, that you make with words. Yeah. A yantra is a picture that you meditate on.
Really?
And the priests will sometimes draw the pictures on paper.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they create them with colored rice or colored sand. Buddhists do the same. And as they're meditating on the picture, they chant the words.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Words and pictures, words and pictures. And it's exactly the same principle.
Wow.
It's thought to be 10,000 years old. It was passed on to Buddhism. You'll see it in some other ancient religions as well. And it's this combination of having an image mm-hmm. and the word that helps with the whole brain activation. And I think it was like an ancient knowledge that was a little bit lost, and westernized goal setting become all about writing the words.
Yeah.
But really, it lacks power when we have only words. And then you know, new age stuff come along. A lot of people get into dream boards and vision boards, but sometimes they don't have the words and the clarity. And so goal mapping really, it was a flash of insight that I'm still learning about. But actually, that principle of words and pictures has been around a very, very long time.
Fantastic. Right. So I want to ask you another one more question. Before I do that, so thank you, listeners, viewers. Thank you for tuning in to the Business Success Show. Really appreciate it. Remember to join us in the Business Success Club on Facebook. Facebook, the Business Success Club. To hear more experts like this and get more techniques, strategies, and tactics to take your business forward. So this question I have for you, Brian, is more around how can business owners, who are the most people listening to our show here, utilize the goal mapping system or formula or template to create a better business month by month, year by year, whatever? How can they utilize that more to feel, I think for me, certainly I feel more certainty. I can see it when I'm using it. There is a story I was going to tell you about my daughter. I don't know if I share that with you, but maybe I'll do that in a moment. But how can they utilize that to get better results?
I just access the free material and either on paper if they wish, if that's their desire. But my recommendation is the online system.
And so are you talking about go to goalmapping.com?
Goalmapping.com, and that's my main website. And right at the top there, the online program is introduced, and there is a button there to register. And when a person registers, they will receive the paper templates as well as access to the online. So you've got both. Within the online program, there's also the family material if they want to share it with a family and not just business. There is video tutorial instruction that guides the person through the seven steps of creating their map. And it may be that they want to do a business map using the online because of having the flexibility to update the map. And maybe they even want to do another map, but it's more of a personal map that they'd like to do on paper. Yeah. The reason why I have mine printed out, which is easy to do once you have the map, is because creating the map starts those brain cell connections. Right. But you want to look at it once a day. And as you look at the pictures, say the words. It's right. A little ritual to get into. It only takes a moment. But you want to do that really first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. And having it online means that as you do that, or you have it up somewhere around you in the day, you will notice small changes you want to make. On paper, it would mean redrawing the map, but online, click of a button, you can edit it, you can change the imagery, you can change the goal. And it creates the map into sort of a living document almost. And so my business goal map, I update it regularly, and then every so often, maybe once a month, I print out a new one. Okay. Sometimes if it's a big change, I might print it out once a week, but it just allows me to update it. I share it with my team. Mm-hmm. A lot of my team have done their own maps, and it's the way that we communicate our intentions. It's exactly the same with bigger businesses when they want to share maps between departments,
right?
Overall map, department map, all the way down to an individual having a map about their responsibilities. And my biggest project doing it that way was British Telecom. 2,500 people all creating goal maps from the senior team down through the different channels of BT Retail, British Telecom Retail, and right down to individual salespeople and project managers, all with their own maps around their aspects of achievement, all feeding back into this sort of one central map. You can take a similar principle in your own life. And last point for me on this is that it's not knowing about it that makes it work.
It's doing it, right?
It's having your map.
Yeah.
That's what forms the brain. It's not listening to me for an hour. Mm. You know, right. It's having your map. And that's why after 20-odd years, it's 25 years almost exactly.
Fantastic.
25 years and a few days.
Yeah.
Since first teaching it back in 1995. And I'm still creating my own maps. Because I run my business and look to define my life through these systems.
I will say to all our listeners and viewers, it's a great system. I use it. I use it to plan my year, use it to plan my month, and it really keeps me on track. And I'll give you a short story before we finish. Brian introduced my children to goal mapping. And what happened was my eldest daughter, who's at university now. So 2 years ago, when he introduced it, she had written on there, on one of the maps, and she drew it out, that she wanted to be, she studies performing arts, so acting, dancing, singing. And she's at university doing that now. But 2 years ago, when she wrote this out, she said she had pictured it and written it to be on stage with a major A-list celebrity. And my wife and I looked at it, wow, are we setting her up to fail? I mean, what, you know, she's, we're thinking, well, that's good. Well, what happened was because we sat down, I remember it was the December, because usually we plan for the next year. In February the next year, she was invited to come and perform on stage with Pink. And I've shared it on stage several times. I haven't told you. it blew my mind that, wow. And so she loves it. And every year she'll print it out and she will do it. So I want to give you that testimonial, because that really got her juiced up in terms of planning, or not listening to what daddy says, but actually visualizing what she wants in life. And so I think she'll have a great, great life. So thank you for that.
What a fantastic story. No, thank you so much, Mac.
Thank you for that.
And also, it's always a pleasure to see you and speak, my friend.
Thank you, Brian. I really appreciate you coming on here to share your knowledge, share your genius, share your work. And again, let me remind you, check out what Brian is doing. Go to goalmapping.com. He's got lots of free stuff there. But like he said, it's not about listening to this thing here. It's actually doing. And this is for everyone. And literally, if you want to improve in your life, you want to improve in your business, you want to improve as a parent, you want to improve in relationships, you want to improve in sports, this tool will help you to do that. And business owners, go ahead and do that now and check out goalmapping.com, connect with Brian and listen to what he says in order to move forward. Brian, again, thank you very much. And I want to say, keep doing what you're doing. Keep changing lives. And I know you've changed and empowered hundreds of thousands of people around the world with your work. Keep doing that. So thank you again. And to our listeners, make sure you tune in for next time. Thank you.